Welcome to the Sons of Liberty podcast, coming to you from the Liberty Tree Studio in San Antonio, Texas, where we discuss topics of the day, firearms, great food, and even better whiskey. Grab a drink, sit down with your host, the founding daddies, Mike Mahalski and Kyle Grothus.
Howdy, guys. Welcome to the SLGW podcast, and this is a Q&A with Mike and Kyle again.
Yeah, this is our second Q&A session, and this time I think it's going to get a lot more wild. Having looked at the 5,000 questions that we've asked, some of them are incredibly difficult personal or would require some nuance and some actual conversation. This is going to be a long podcast because I want to actually get to as many questions as we can, and I can't condense a reasonable answer in all of these like within an hour, so buckle up. You're probably in for, I hope you're on a long drive or a long flight, because this will get you there.
This podcast is brought to you by Patron.
Patron tequila. What's weird, when I quit drinking, my drink of choice was always vodka, like any kind of vodka. That was what I drank primarily, but I never craved vodka. Like, you know, in the years I stopped drinking, for some reason, I always craved tequila and I never drank tequila, which is very weird. I have no idea why.
At least you're not drinking like a communist now. You've upgraded to Mexican. So.
Hey, so I used to date a girl that was like a world paleo expert. She actually wrote some books. She did some work with like Rob Wolf and stuff. And she claimed the only real like kind of healthy liquor there is tequila. It's the most like natural, like good for you if there is such a thing.
I'm going to switch to your regular Patron though, because I got fancy and tried the sherry cask Añejo and it tastes like shit. They're trying to mix like whiskey stuff and tequila stuff, and they just not good.
By the way, you know who we need to have on here, and I'm gonna call him today. We need to have Abraham Answer on here.
Oh, dude, that'd be awesome. I actually bought a bottle of his Fletch Azulia, the Blanco, yesterday.
So one of our good friends and customers is a guy named Abraham Answer. He's one of the best golfers in the world. He's on the, I think he moved over to live. I would too for the $50 million or whatever it is they gave him. But yeah,
you're going to pay me and I can suck at golf? Yeah, I'll say that. Not saying you suck at golf, but.
Actually, the answer's pretty badass. But he also owns that company, Fletch Azul. His business partner in that endeavor is Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. It's pretty rad. So, all right, man. So let's get this thing kicked off. Dude, Kyle, do you want to take a look? All right, here we go. By the way, there are a few questions that you guys asked. And like I said, nothing's off limits. There are a few questions that y'all asked that I've been wanting to address for a long time. And responding in the comment section, by like responding on fucking Instagram, is a really inefficient, or I should say like ineffective way to tackle topics that require nuance and that require an actual explanation. So on some of these questions, there might be a little bit longer answer, but if you're going to ask a question that has that level of complexity to it, expect an answer, okay, that has a little bit of nuance. And for the guys that hate us, which is funny because I was surprised at how many people follow us who just fucking don't like us. Well, this episode is kind of for you, okay? All right.
All right, so we'll start with the softball from our owner's group, from Mr. John Gradius. Can you talk a little bit about what's next for the Mark 10? All right, so we are currently in the process of shipping out the last 60 or 70 of the previous generation of the guns. So y'all see those hit the market and over the next few months. And we are redoing the Mark 10 into a Gen 2, like a version 2 of the gun. So some of the changes will be coming. It'll be a whole new receiver set. New rail, so we're going to the M89 rail that y'all are that's been real popular on the small frame side.
It's the strongest rail in the market. I don't give a fuck. I'm just going to say it. It's true.
It really is. And imagine how strong it's going to be with an Integra Arc rail on the bottom. So all the Mark 10s are going to have the option for Integra Arc on the bottom. We're going to start doing shorter barrel lengths. We're going to start doing 14-1 pin and welds in 308 and in 6.5 Creedmoor. We have our own Liberty charging handle now in 7.62 that'll come out for the Air 10 platform. That'll be coming out here sooner, probably before the guns. All of them will have two-stage triggers. All of them will have our new V2 precision barrels.
Those new V2 precision barrels are truly impressive. Like, I know that there's been like a barrel perception issue with how we've done things in the past. We're going to stomp on all of y'all. all of that perception issue, I guess I should say. Because, I mean, honestly, we... we built this thing, because before we were building rifles purely for endurance, right? And if you got like a minute or a minute and a half gun, in my opinion, that was going to accomplish pretty much anything you want. The processes in which now that we're doing some of our barrels, a lot of the processes are actually in-house, which when we get Clark on this podcast, I think people are going to understand how insane we've gone in the barrel direction.
Yeah.
But these guns are going to be guaranteed, you know, sub-minute. I would argue they're probably going to be the most accurate 308s on the market.
And somebody, I know somebody had asked you another question was, can we see the contour for the V2? And yes, we'll throw an image up when we edit the podcast. We'll put an image up on screen so you can kind of see it. They'll be coming out here soon. I know Mike shot a video at Big Tech's about it. So once that comes out on their schedule, you'll see it. I mean, if you can look in the video, you can kind of see it on the table.
Yeah, so what's cool, man, is these V2 barrels, the new profiles we've had these prints done for almost 3.5 years. So these prints have been sitting in our shelf. Like our print, our design for a barrel, the way we optimally have always wanted to make a barrel, or I should say not always, but whenever we decided to do this about 3 years ago, the problem is you had COVID and you had all kinds of issues over the last several years. And it makes it extremely hard to do that right. Unlike other companies in this fucking industry, we didn't want to just make something and then let the commercial market be the guinea pig. So we wanted to be able to have adequate testing and real data before we put it out. So these engineering drawings, these prints, all the stuff's been sitting there. We've had samples. We've shot them for years. Like, we know they're pretty good. But it wasn't until we had a bit of a lull and some breathing room where we were able to actually do the kind of testing and collect the empirical data that we wanted to be able to launch. I'll tell you what, over the next like 6 to 8 weeks, we are going to bombard the industry with like the empirical data for all of our new barrels across the board. And if people want to learn something about barrels, and I'm not talking about like some fucking brochure, like, hey, our barrel's really neat. I'm talking, if you want real data, we're about to like, I don't know, like, we're almost filming a documentary on it with like, and if you're a nerd, you're going to love it. We're going to go pretty deep down the rabbit hole and you guys are going to learn a lot about what makes barrels good. What defines service life? How do you predict accuracy? Yada, 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 yada. And so I'm really excited to unleash this because I've listened to the our fans and the critics, and we're going to hopefully respond to both of you.
This is going to be just like the Chinese New Year calendar. It's going to be the Sons of Liberty year of the barrel.
Yeah.
It's not the year of the rats. Yeah, I don't know what fucking year it is. I know next year's the year of the dragon, though, because we're looking forward to that. Because every time we get a SHOT Show, there's giant animals, you know, of all the whatever year it is. And we look, you know, we have the Green Dragon Trading Company, Green Dragon Bourbon. Next year's the year of the dragon. So for those of y'all going to SHOT Show, we'll do some cool Green Dragon year of the dragon swag stuff going on. It'll be fun.
Yeah. Okay, man. So do you want to do another one from the owners group?
Yeah, let's hit the owners group. Let's see what we got. I want to skip some of the silly ones.
Ask me one silly one.
Why is the AK platform better than the AR?
It's not. It's actually not. And just real, this is the real reason. That's the thing. That's a reasonable question. The AK platform is not better than the AR platform. And here's my thinking behind that. Right. I mean, don't get me wrong. The AK platform, it's a robust platform. It's a reliable platform. It's one of the most, you know, obviously prolific platforms of weapons ever designed. And I respect it for what it is. The thing is like, you know, like if you look at the Russian military or the Soviet military back when the Soviets were around, they didn't have a depot level armory. Like if a trunnion broke or if a weld broke or something, like if there was any kind of like real issue with that receiver, you would pull the furniture off, you'd melt the entire thing down, and then Ivan would just start over, right? For the M4 or the AR platform, every single component of that gun is replaceable by something you have in a pocket. You don't need, you know, industrial presses. You don't need to be a blacksmith in order to service that gun. And if you build rifles the way we build rifles, I think that the difference between like some kind of like insane reliability to, you know, to regardless of fouling or anything else, our rifles will plow right through that shit. And I think they're inherently more accurate. They're certainly more end user serviceable. So do I think that the AK is a better rifle? No, I honestly don't. Not if you build the fucking M4 the way, you know, like the way we build them. So anyways, good question.
All right, next question was, is there anything in the pipeline for new shirts that you need more swag? And then there's another one in here about wanting a shirt that someone's pet fits in or something. I don't know. Fat dude with a pet. You shouldn't have your pet in your shirt with you, first of all. But yes, we're going to have a lot more swag coming out. We're going to be kind of changing how we do that. You know, a lot of y'all know we have Green Dragon Trading Company, and we're going to keep that. But I can kind of roll this in with another question. Someone was asking about the website. Like, when are we going to redo the website? Next week. So we have a new website. We're in the process of getting it all loaded into a demo site right now. Do we make sure there's no bugs? We're completely redoing the website next week. And part of that will be, you know, we'll have more swag on the main site, but we're also going to keep less SKUs of swag. Some of the specialty shirts we've done for Darcy, whoever else, are going to be done in more limited runs, you know, and that way we're always going to have the logo shirts, you know, the main stuff that y'all have come to expect from us will always be on the site, but we're going to kind of change up how we're doing that for the reason so we can launch more shirts more often, you know, cool stuff. If anybody's got any ideas, feel free to let us know. Kick us over an idea. We're always open to something. But yeah, y'all will be seeing a new website next week. And once that's up, we'll be getting more of our products up on the website for y'all to buy, especially stuff that dealers don't carry, like barrel nuts and hardware. We had someone ask us for a barrel nut the other day that, you know, they lost it or broke it or whatever.
Or like rescue kits for bolts.
Yeah.
You know, some of the smaller stuff. Or yeah, so we want to maintain that direct connection to the consumer. And so we're going to be putting a lot of stuff up on our website. That's something we haven't done in 3 years, because literally everything we've had, every single thing we could possibly, you know, make or produce has been sucked up by, you know, distributors way in advance, right? So we want to put that stuff up there and be able to offer, again, a little more nuanced stuff. That if somebody wants, you know, one of our extractors, it'll be available through our website. You know, all the way up to complete rifles. And I know I'm getting ahead of myself. There were a few questions about, like, you know, are we ever going to be able to offer custom rifle making again? And yes, on the new website, the idea is to be allow, you know, probably in somewhat of a limited way, but for people to, you know, order an M89 with, you know, a certain Cerakote job and, you know, a specific muzzle device or something. You know.
All right. Next one we got is back on the kind of the Mark 10 thing is, like, will Sons of Liberty start producing more large frame components available to consumers? So we already do. If you look on the website, the BCGs are available on the website. We've always had barrels, but we're redoing them all. So yes, all the new barrels coming out, the new 7.62 charging handle, we will 100% have all the new M89 Mark 10 rails with and without the integral arc up there.
Yes.
7.62 Noxes. I mean, there's quite a bit up there. The one thing we've never done is sold receiver sets.
Which I don't think we will.
No, we're not going to do that. And the reason being is because making a large frame gun is hard. And we would rather do that for the consumer yourselves. We really don't want guns with our name out there that are fucked up.
And I'll answer that in a less polite way. If somebody buys a Sons Liberty Mark 10 receiver set and then you put pure shit in there and then your performance sucks, whenever you go out into the world and someone's like looking at this thing you cobbled together, like, I don't want it to say Sons of the... Nobody blames the shit barrel you put in there. Like, nobody blames the fact, like, the parts compatibility was never thought through, or, like, you used the wrong style bolt catch, in which everybody knows DPMS high, DPMS low, DPMS intermediate, SR25, AR10. But, like, even in within those categories, there's, like, multiple subcategories. So if you pick the wrong bolt catch and you're having, like, some type of functional issue in there, no one's going to blame you or your bolt catch. They're going to blame whoever's name is on the side of the receiver. So as far as Mark 10 receivers, I'll never sell those loose. Now, barrels, bolts, charging handles, the rail, honestly, this rail that we're putting out is so awesome that, I mean, I think that, like, it would if you put this on another good existing rifle, I think it would, you know, it'd be all right.
And we did go to, so in speaking of compatibility, the previous generation, our new generation, aren't even compatible, because we went from DPMS low to DPMS high. And one of the reasons we did that is because DPMS high is much more prolific in the market, and we wanted that rail to be compatible with more receiver sets out there, so you could build guns. We wanted it to be a little more interchangeable parts. DPMS low is, there's very few people that do it, and we were one of them. So yeah, we changed gears on that for the next generation, so the rails will a lot more of y'all can buy and enjoy the M89 rail. It's gonna be the best.
Yeah, it really is. Especially, like, I mean, and when you see, like, the Arca locking version, it's pretty nice. It's all one piece. It's solid shit. So if you're shooting off tripods or you know, even if you wanted like, you know, a flat surface in which to, you know, rest the gun, it's pretty solid.
And shoot off a Wilderness Co. tripod.
There you go.
Once they hit the market. All right, what do you got over there from Instagram?
Well, let's take a look here. All right, I'm going to go in order. From Kit Badger, who would win in a fight between a grilled cheese sandwich and a taco? I would say a taco. So if you know where Sun's Liberty is located on the south side of San Antonio, if you saw our tacos, they would win almost any fight. And what I mean by that is, I think a grilled cheese sandwich would, like, you know, like, try to be honorable, like, put up your dukes, you know, and they want to fight like this. You know, the Sun's Liberty Southside Taco, where we're located, would just pull out a switchblade and shank you. So I'm putting my money on the taco. What legacy do you want to leave behind, brand or personal, speaking within the gun community? That's a great question. This is from Veracity Solutions, who is an incredibly good shooter, good guy. That's Scott Peterson.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sure. I don't know everybody's Instagram handle. So,
the legacy that I like to leave behind is that we put out legitimate work rifles, fighting rifles, endurance rifles, rifles that are better than even the government are, you know, carrying to the American consumer market. Like, to me, like, that is number one, because that's the majority of where our rifles go, right? So that is a big one. Another thing I'm incredibly proud of is that, like, last year in 2022, I trained over 1,000 students in the armor school. And I don't teach that class as a Sons of Liberty class. I teach that as an M4 family of weapons. It's a standards class. And there are at least 1,000 students from last year that could probably, like, keep weapons running even after the delivery truck stop, even after the power shuts off. You know, I think I've helped raise the bar in the education on the platform and how to keep weapons in the fight. That's the, so far, the biggest legacy. We have new and innovative products and all that stuff's kind of cool, but teaching people really how this gun eats and breathes, that's been, I think, the best thing I've done yet. I think we've raised the end user support. I think many companies have looked at our warranty and our end user support and they have adopted it. Now, remember, go back to 2014, whenever we officially launched and we offered free barrel replacement, you know, no fault warranty. If your fucking house burned down, we replace the gun. We were the first to do all of that. Now, you know, fast forward to 2023, there's a few companies that have stepped up to do that. We were the first. I think that us doing that raised the bar on the post-sale support across the industry. And I'm very proud of that. All right. Moving on. Will you guys actually make an SOLGW crink? We have no, I talked about this on the last podcast. We have no interest in actually producing full on AKs. Now, we are going to be producing some components for AKs that you guys are going to see pretty soon, because I think it's cool. And I think we have a few things we can lend to the AK market, but, you know, guys like Gary Hughes and Jim Puller and, like, dudes that are really putting some cool effort into that, I have no interest in competing against them because they're really fucking good.
We'll stay in our lane.
Yeah. L89 release date. So the L89 rails are here. They've been here for a while. We need to get product photography. We need to update the website. We are waiting for the new website to launch to be able to put some of the stuff up. But, like, they're here, and I would say the release for those is imminent. Why is your website really not good? Our website sucks. I've always hated it. But as of this week, I think we're going to... They were gonna have a pretty good website. I think you'll like it.
I will say the back end works really well. Like, it works well, it just looks like shit. So I think it's gonna look good and work really well come next week, which is gonna be awesome. So
yeah. Gas port sizing, gas block tube leakage, overall gas budget, balancing all of that with buffer mass, spring tension. There's a question in here somewhere. Okay. Hi-Fi 88. For some reason, and I think that some of the stuff stems from a video that Gun Thoughts released on a 12.5 that we had put out a while back. And they I think they actually bought a barrel that we never intended for that. That was one of those contract barrels we had done where that particular entity was running really anemic frange. And so we had to gas the gun a certain way for that really anemic frange. And they bought it without telling me they were buying it, which is cool. But I don't think we overgas our guns at all. I think we have adequate gas and adequate mass. And if you want your gun to be like reliable in all climates, sub-freezing, hot, dry, fouled, worn rings, anemic ammo, whatever the fuck the case is, you need adequate gas and adequate mass. And you, the trick is on like an apocalypse gun is that you don't want to, you need enough gas to run through adversity, but not so much gas that whenever you add a suppressor to it, it's going to push you outside of that operational envelope. So there's a bit of a balance, and there's no free lunch. If you want a gun that's super comfortable to shoot and has like really good shootability, then you have to gas that gun a certain way. But what you are going to give up is part of the width of that operational envelope. That gun is not going to do as well under adverse conditions. If you're the type of shooter who is constantly maintaining your guns, lubing it a certain way, only feeding it one diet of ammo, you can probably get away with that. Or if you're using like a specific traditional can, you can do that. If we're producing rifles in the thousands and thousands and thousands for the commercial market, and you're trying to make it almost idiot proof to where like the gun's just gonna fucking run no matter what, okay? Like the formula is a bit different. Now, what I will say was interesting. We were talking about this 3 or 4 years ago. Right now, if you look at the trend in suppressor companies, almost every single reputable suppressor company is now making a low back pressure can. Almost everybody is now producing float through cans that have very little carrier speed increase. So the guns that we gas to run reliably unsuppressed, when you throw that can on there, is going to have a very minimal impact on carrier speed. If you built a gun that's reliant on the suppressor to work, okay, well, you're stuck with that suppressor barrel combo, because on some of the guns I've seen out there, if you were to put like a low back pressure can that is not, you know, overcoming the lack of dwell or the smaller port, you're going to need a new barrel. Sun's Liberty customers, you don't need shit. Just throw that new can on there and keep fucking. That's all. I mean, that's the truth. So do I think our guns are ever gassed? No, not when I look at some of the older DDs that had like on a 10.3 had a 0.81, a 0.081 gas port. Like that's huge. We never did that, you know, or some of the, even the Noveski barrels that required like switch blocks and stuff. We always kept our guns to have a little bit more gas than you actually need, simply to open the operational envelope, but not too much gas. When you put a can on there, the gun starts to fuck itself up. So, I mean, if people want to regurgitate stuff they read on Reddit, okay, fine. Come on our show one day. I would love to have like the, you know, the average shit talker come sit on the show. And I really hope you brought your A game, because, you know,
we're going to fuck you up.
We're going to fuck you up.
Yeah. According to my girlfriend, the only thing around here overgassed is me. answer another question. This hasn't been released yet, so we may have to edit it out later. We'll see. But someone's asking, will you guys make a muzzle device long enough for a 13.7 barrel that is made for Huxworth suppressors?
Yes.
I have one of y'all's, and yes. So we're not making it. They are making it for us because of, you know, their muzzle device is part of the system. And, right. You know, they want to do that themselves. But we did work with them on designing one. And they have some new cans coming out. The Huxworth guy was actually here yesterday. Really great guy. And got to see some of their new stuff. And it's really nice, man. I've got one of the Flow, the new 3D printed Flow 7.62 cans.
They're nice.
Super light, like stupid light. Like you don't even know you're holding it. And they've got another one coming out I probably can't talk about, but it's pretty neat. It's a little more affordable and a little more modular. And it's pretty badass. I've been really excited with some of the stuff they're doing. But yes, we will be, I'm not sure on the timeline on that, but we will have a option for a Huxworth muzzle device. And speaking of the Mark 10s, going back to that, we'll have actual SKUs in the system that'll be available at dealers with one on the 14 ones pin and welded, ready to go on those.
That's awesome.
So that'll be a new thing. They won't just be available with Noxes, which will be really cool. So
do you think fancy bolt carrier groups like chrome, nickel boron, nitride are worth it over traditional phosphate, or is it just fluff? I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. This is a good question. So first of all, I'm not a fan of nickel boron at all. I think nickel boron is complete garbage. And the only nickel boron bolt carrier groups you see are from usually trash peddlers. Like, I mean, go find me a nickel boron bolt carrier group made by Knights or LMT or Daniel Defense or Colt or Noveski or Psionics or Centurion or Suns. Go find a nickel boron company, or go find a nickel boron bolt carrier group made by a company that is an established performance brand. You will not find them, because that is not a good thing. Now, when it comes to nitride or NP3 or something. This is one of those things where people have to, again, it requires nuance. I like phosphate carriers because they hold lube really well. But if I was operating in, or not, I should say, I'm like not operating because I hate the word like operator. I'm certainly not an operator. But if I was using my rifle in an environment that was, you know, in a maritime environment, phosphate might not be the best finish for that. Okay, like nitride or QPQ might be a good finish for an environment that requires corrosion resistance. Now, with that being said, you have to be thinking about what you're subjecting the gun to. So if someone said, you know, is trying to argue which one is better, if you ask that question in a vacuum, it's a bit unfair. You have to kind of ask yourself which one is better for this specific application. And if you are going to use a different finish, then make sure that the rest of the things have been, that finish in and of itself has been factored into the original dimensions of the machining of the part, right? So that's my answer to that. It's a good question, though.
All right, next one is, any chance you develop a Canadian legal rifle for those of us who believe in gun ownership? I mean, I'll be real honest. I don't know what the fuck a Canadian legal rifle looks like. Like, if it comes with a side of poutine, like, I have no idea. Would we? Fuck yeah. Like, we export guns to other countries. I mean, Sons of Liberty now available in Slovakia. As of this week, we picked up a dealer in Slovakia. I don't know if anybody's ever seen that movie Euro Trip, but that's all I thought about when we were talking to these people. It's like, oh, thank God we did this in summer. In winter, it gets very depressing. I don't know if it's coming on the train, but of course we would if we can. I honestly, Canada, I mean, no offense, Canada kind of sucks freedom wise. So I don't know what that looks like.
I'll tell you what, if there's a Canadian dealer or distributor up there,
call us.
Yeah, give us a call and then let's examine what that would look like. And if it's something that we can reasonably do, I'd be happy to do it. I'd love to see some. I mean, we get so many orders for like hats and t-shirts and stickers and mugs and shit from Canada. Like, I'd love to send rifles up there. But, you know, like to pair up with like a distributor or a dealer that, you know, is very comfortable with.
That's what would have to happen. Yeah, distributor preferably, yeah, in Canada. If there's anybody's listening or knows one, you know, if their cousin's a Canuck and is real polite, you know, tell them to give us a call.
Hey, so who's making your barrels? All of the new barrels that we're making, we're under NDA with. What I can tell you is that some of the processes we have moved in-house. We've also gotten a lot more involved in cherry-picking blanks. And I think there's a question later on that I can answer that in more depth, why that's important. I think people will like them, so I'm going to just keep going. Will Sons Liberty make a piston-driven AR? The answer is no. I've been asked this question for years, and I've always tried to, you know, give my best answer, right? So most dedicated piston guns, you have a bolt that rides on a track because you have an op rod smacking into it, and it's that impact, that inertia that drives the bolt and the carrier to cycle the gun. The AR has like a cylindrical bore, that raceway where the carrier rides, right? On a piston gun, the reason why you have to beef up the tail on piston gun bolts or bolt carrier groups is because it creates that carrier tilt. I also do not like the idea of proprietary parts. Almost every AR piston gun has a proprietary op rod. There's also like the myth that they run cooler and cleaner. Well, on a suppressed gun, that bolt is unlocking under pressure. So a lot of that fouling that you see is actually coming from the chamber because the bolt starts the unlock process when the bullet passes the gas port. And if you have a suppressor on there, it's that bolt is unlocking under pressure. I personally don't think there's any mechanical or true benefit to the AR piston. Couple of things to think about. LWRC, PWS, POF, you know, all of these companies that started out making piston-driven rifles now sell more DI rifles than they do piston. The inverse is not true. Like, the DI companies have not gone out and adopted piston guns. If there was a true mechanical advantage, I promise you we would all adopt it to stay competitive. Let me give you an example. If you remember Keymod, like, Keymod was a way to mount stuff to your rail. And then as soon as M-Lock came out, Keymod went away like a fucking fart in the wind. It was gone. because it was a truly better interface. And in order for us to stay competitive, we had to adopt what was better. If that argument was applied to the Piston versus DI, if there was a true advantage to Piston, I promise you we would have all adopted it by now. The inverse is true. Piston companies make more DI guns. I don't think that, don't get me wrong, a dedicated piston gun, you know, that's built from the ground up to be a piston gun, they work just great. I don't think that forcing the M4 or the AR into a piston role has worked out all that great because, well, at least the market hasn't asked us for it. So
I'm going to do a PS on the Canadian thing. If we do one, we got to name it the AR-15, like EHHHR-15. So call us. We're going to do it. All right. So next question is 13.9 and rifles for surefire suppressors going to be available anytime soon. So the plan is we are coming out with our new V2 barrel. It's going to be coming out in a button rifled QPQ version like our current combat barrels, but we're also going to be doing a cold hammer forge version of the same barrel. The button currently on the first few runs, the 13.7 will be the button rifle version and the cold hammer forge version is going to be 13.9. So those of y'all that have surefire suppressors tend to be a very discerning crowd. So we're gonna do that cold hammer forge barrel for y'all. So y'all can, we have a little more open up, not just surefire, a lot more suppressor options on that barrel. So y'all will see that coming out. And if it's successful, we'll, you know, we can always do another 13.9. And of course, our current Gen 1 combat government profile barrels are available from Primary Arms as a 13.9. So if you have a surefire, go pick one of those up or, you know, wait for the Cold Hammer Forge to come out here in the next 48 weeks.
All right, here's a good question. 11.5 MIDI or even 12.5 MIDI? The answer is no. I have no interest in building an 11.5 MID or a 12.5 MID because I don't think there's adequate dwell time on there to make the rifle truly reliable, at least not to our standards or the firing schedules that we ask the guns to survive. And if you look at the evolution of the suppressor technology for every major suppressor company in the country, that are going to flow through or low back pressure cans. Now, if you're using a traditional suppressor that's going to mimic dwell and you're counting on that extra, you know, back pressure from the suppressor to run your gun, well, you can, an 11.5 MIDI or a 12.5 MIDI is probably fine because the suppressor is going to force the gun to work. As suppressors evolve and you have more flow through and low back pressure, that 11 and 12 MIDIs are going to become more and more and more of a bad idea. Luckily for us, we don't have to change shit, but we've always stuck to the 12.5, 11.5 carbine, and our guns just run. Now, if you want to make things more shootable, some of our new gas ports on some of our new barrels, we do have a few that are gas like 5.56 only, and I think that's going to be a real pleasure to shoot suppressed or unsuppressed, whether you're using a new can or an old can. So that's a good question. Right. Why is Arizona a better state than Texas in every way? I lived in Arizona for a little bit. I lived on a drop zone in Eloy because I was a skydive junkie, and that was like, you know, the best place. Arizona has some good gun laws, and there's some neat stuff. I think Phoenix is a fun town. Mill Avenue, good shit. But, like, honestly, I think the desert colors are depressing as fuck. Like, all the mauves and purples and oranges and stuff. And then just the fucking wastelands of shit you have to drive through from city to city. I don't know, man. I personally, I'm a big fan of Texas, and I'm not going to – I mean, cheers to the Arizona people. We love you, but I think I'm good just here.
Enjoy your sand.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was, I remember last time I think it was in Arizona, and we drove to SHOT Show that one year, and we stopped in Flagstaff, and I'm pretty sure the statute of limitations is over on this one. We got fucking trashed and just kept driving. Like, I was driving through there's trees somewhere in there because I remember trees flying by and snow and some other shit. Just blasting metal. I don't know anybody slow. Driving one of those Sprinter vans just as fast as I possibly could, like through Arizona, and just woke up in Nevada. I made it to the next state, like by the Hoover Dam somewhere on the side of the road asleep, and I had no idea how I got there. Never doing that again, by the way, but that's why we do. That's why we fly to SHOT, because they don't let me fly the plane. Could, that'd be fun, but...
Y'all bumped into like some fans, right?
Yeah, we bumped into some guys that are there for armor training. I don't even know what base is near Flagstaff, to be real honest, but they were like huge fans. We just got, they kept buying us shots. We got trashed. Like, we're on the side of the road. There's pictures. If we find it, we'll put it up. But all of us, like, standing outside our Sprinter van with guns on the side of the road in Flagstaff, it was a lot of fun because we've been driving for like 12, 18 hours at that point. We were fucking tired. And We're like, should we get a hotel? No, let's get fucked up and just keep driving. That sounds like a good plan. And I think like three of us ended up driving that night, and I don't know how we're still here. Thank God. I wouldn't be here on the podcast. Like that was the last time I ever did that. It's real, real stupid.
Here's one. If you could resurrect one vilified patriot, who would it be and why? It's a controversial answer. either McCarthy or MacArthur. One of the two. Tell you what, MacArthur wanted to fucking march into China and fuck them up. And you know what? Maybe probably
should have let him.
Yeah, probably, looking back, probably should have let him. And McCarthy was outing communists, back in the day. Let me tell you, like I don't give a shit, and I'm not sorry for this at all. Like, I can be friends with a Democrat. I can be friends with people with leftist views. I can be friends with people that have like a different political view than me. You know, if it's under the guise of like within the Constitution and the founding intents of like that kind of healthy and spirited debate, I don't have a fucking thing in common with someone who espouses communist ideology. I think communists are, not real people. So if I could bring back either one of them, McCarthy or MacArthur, I think they were onto something.
I made it a point to take like a half of my kids' candy every time, so they fucking hate communism too.
That's good.
The daddy tax.
That's right. Yeah. You like that candy? Here, this is for the state.
And I am the state.
Let's see here.
What is your? I like this one. What is your favorite thing about doing events by like Lethal Weapon Texas? Like we do so many events, but that one is so different. It's so much fun. Like I still haven't been to Clash Bash, which isn't happening this year, which kind of sucks. But he has. That was so much fun. Like I had wardrobe changes. Like I was the guy from. It's actually the picture on the podcast we do. It's like I was the guy from Jurassic Park. It's actually still my ringtone. I had my girlfriend dress up as a dinosaur. He was the guy from Heat. We had a ton of fun. Like that was just a really, really fun event. It's actually competition. Like guys go there and try to compete. I mean, you got to like shoot through like a pile of blow. I mean, there's a bunch of crazy stuff going on.
We had a Scarface thing where like you had like get up from your table full of cocaine and then get up and like run this Tony Montana stage. There was a Predator. There was Rambo. There was like all this good stuff, right? The Lethal Weapon Texas has been by far the most fun.
It's like one of our best pictures. I actually framed that and put it in my house.
Yeah, so Lethal Weapon Texas has probably been the most fun gun event I've ever been to. Because I think a lot of us that got into this business and then the people that are like really into guns, there was that inspiration from like those older action movies and stuff, right? And like those older action movies, I'm pretty sure they were like CIA propaganda, like half the time, like, Rocky and Rambo were always, killing Russians.
So, what's the guy that he fights in Rambo? Not Rambo, fuck is it? Dolph Lundgren. You know he's like a fucking physics PhD or some shit?
Yes, he's more qualified than Bill Nye to like comment on like science stuff.
He was more qualified than Rick Perry to be energy secretary. So. I actually like Rick Perry. I'm sorry I keep making fun of him. I just find that funny.
But that event was fun. I think this industry has lost its sense of humor. And I think that considering like the constant bombardment of attacks and bullshit that we're under, like a good sense of humor kind of help makes it more palatable. And Lethal Weapons Texas is a place for like people who are really into guns to go play with all these cool guns that might not even have a practical purpose, but are really fun to shoot. And that was an awesome event. I mean, it's themed. Everybody can like totally LARP out. Just a great, fun event.
So here's a good one. Would you make an 18-inch ARCA rail handguard or even an integrated ARCA rail handguard at some point? We are working. That's probably a next year thing just because how long it takes to get extrusion. But that is something that, like I said, is going to come out in the Mark 10s. Out to a 16.75 is about as long as we go because if you go past 16 with the extrusions we use because we use a solid seamless extrusion, you can run into run-out issues if you get past about 17 inches. So 18-inch, no. 16.75, definitely. That is something that is in the works. And no, there's another comment on here. Only gay people want that, but I don't think so. I think it's fucking awesome. Like, we're making a tripod now through Wilderness Co. When ARCA first came out, that really wasn't. I'm not an early adopter of anything, to be real honest. We really have to digest stuff and make sure it makes sense before we put it out. But the more I've started putting ARCA adapters on my rifles and stuff. It really is super fucking handy. I mean, it is a lot of fun. It's nice. And the cool thing about the Arca rail extrusions, it allows us to do full on the bottom. We could do just in the back, just in the front. There's a lot of different things we can do with it. So that's something that we'll definitely be coming out with.
Here's one. What's the point where we need to use the Second Amendment for its original intended purpose? Where does that line fall for y'all? And where do you think it needs to be for the populace? Okay. Here's a real question. Here's a real tough question. Okay. The answer is, like, I honestly don't know. I thought about this a lot during the, like, the pandemic. I think a lot of people woke up during that, and you're looking at some of the, like, the lockdowns and the real draconian shit, and, like, you know, like, forcefully compelling people to take medicine, things of that nature. And I thought about it. I'm like, you know, at what point, like, would I get, you know, a little spicy? Then, like, I honestly thought, like, if I were to go pick up my kids from daycare one day and you know, I showed up and the state had taken them or something because, you know, they weren't vaccinated or something, I probably would have gotten pretty violent about that. As far as, like, what that threshold is, I honestly don't know, because people have different thresholds for what they're willing to, what kind of inconvenience they're willing to put up with. I will tell you this. There are people out there who dismiss the idea that an armed populace could change government or society. That is one, I think, very distorted view. If you dismiss the fact that an armed populace could make major changes to, like, the way the world looks, you're fucking wrong. Then there are the people on the other side who, I think, fantasize about such an armed conflict. And they have, like, this romanticized idea of what that would look like. And I think they're equally wrong. I think it'd be very easy to, like, destabilize things. I mean, if 1% of people just stopped obeying traffic laws, I don't think that there's any government mechanism in place that could fix that. I think that you would have a crash of... Society counts on two things, efficiency and mass compliance, okay? Yeah. So when you go to the grocery store and there's... you take for granted, like, the box of Lucky Charms is always where you need to find it. Keep in mind, like, this illusion of surplus is dependent upon efficiency. The day that the trucks stop running, okay, like, your grocery stores are going to be empty within an hour. So even just a traffic jam bad enough could create that. And, you know, not just cereal, but gasoline, medicine, you know, all the other things that, you know, society requires to function. It'd be very easy to destabilize that. The other side is mass compliance, right? Like, San Antonio, like, we live in San Antonio, we're the seventh largest city in the country. I think at any one given time, we have 130 police officers on duty to keep order for a city of 2 million people. Now, let me ask you, do you think that it's 130 police officers that keep order in a city of 2 million? Or do you think that it's the mass compliance of people that keep things functioning? I'll tell you right now, it's the mass compliance, right? If 1% of people just stopped complying with even something mundane, there's no entity that could just forcefully correct that.
Even the military, there's no way. I mean, you think about, like, the war in Iraq, when we had, what, 400,000 or 500,000 troops there one time for a teensy tiny little country that's like a fifth the size of Texas, maybe. I mean, there's no way you could control. If everybody decided, like, fuck you, we're just not doing what we want to do anymore, there's no way in hell the military can control. All these people that go, they're going to come door to door for your guns. You're fucking luck. I mean, it's a lot of doors.
No. I mean, there's no entity in the world big enough to actually do that. And we're not even talking about, like, an ideological noncompliance. I'm not saying, like, you know, one idea or one ideology is going to, like, rise up. I'm saying if people just decided to stop doing anything or just stop giving a fuck, then you wouldn't even have the idea. I mean, you'd have opportunists, like a guy that cares about nothing but wants to go, you know, rob a bank.
I mean, they can't even stop him from shitting on the street in Portland. I mean, what are they going to do? I mean,
yeah. So if you dismiss the idea that an armed populace could not fundamentally change, like, the entire way things function very quickly, I'm talking within 24 hours, things would go to absolute shit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, easy. And then if you dismiss that, you're wrong. If you're on the other side of that where you fantasize about this kind of thing happening, I hope you've thought through the fact that whatever emerges may not be better than what we currently have. Whatever emerges might be quite a bit worse, Okay. I mean, you know, you would have probably balkanization since most people don't agree on anything. You know, if somebody with a strong political ideology that you didn't fundamentally agree with were to emerge as like the warlord or that fucking thing, you might not like it. Okay. So those of us who have actually thought through the real intended purpose of the Second Amendment, which is to ultimately cast out or defeat tyranny, you have to look at the consequences of what that thing really looks like. Like in the 1700s, when our founding fathers picked up arms, there was one common enemy. It was a nation. And if you could defeat that nation or drive that nation's claim to your to the colonies out, that was like a pretty unified goal. Now, you know, after that, like there was quite a bit of debate on like what the system of governance would look like once that happened, but at least you had a common enemy. Today, I don't actually think you do. I don't think there's two Americas. I think there's 50 Americas. And when the shooting starts, okay, like when the shooting starts, it's not going to be like, you know, us versus them, whatever your idea of that looks like. It's going to be like kind of every tribe for themselves. And I don't think people realize how tribal and fractured and balkanized that thing really looks. So can an armed populace turn this thing on its fucking head in 24 hours? 100%. What emerges after that? Do you think it's going to be better than what we currently have? I honestly don't think so. I think it would look more like Mad Max than, you know, than Massachusetts 1794.
Yeah, okay. So, and something you got to realize too is that, you know, back in those days, you know, when we had the American Revolution, a lot of people were a lot more self-sufficient. So it's like, oh, you have to, there was no fucking HEB. You know, if the grocery Walmart was out of cereal, like you just made your own fucking cereal. You know, guys, you know, and they still suffered. Like if you go read about what happened back then, they were still starving. They were still suffering. You know, it was a shitty time for a lot of people. And most of them shot their own food, caught their own fish, made their own butter, made their own fucking clothes. You know what I mean?
There was no electricity. There was no, like, you know, running water. There was no plumbing. You know, like, grandpa wasn't dependent on, you know, his heart medicine to live. You know, I'm serious. Or, I mean, you know, or your cousin with diabetes.
He just fucking died.
You just fucking died. So I'm just saying, like, you know, whatever this idea of stability and semblance of, like, you know, a comfortability that you might have, it would be fundamentally gone. Now, some people might think that that's a, it's easy to sit there and think about this fantasy, like in the comfort of your mom's basement. But, you know, when it actually happens, it's pretty bleak. And I don't know what system would emerge victorious or what that would look like. You know, there are people that I fundamentally disagree with that also happen to like guns, but I would certainly hate to live under their worldview of, you know, what the world should look like.
Oh man. Yeah. It would get wild fast. I mean, you think about like, if you're hungry enough, like, oh, we forgot grandma at the old home. Nah, somebody ate her. I mean, like it's going to get real weird real fast if you're hungry enough. I don't want to deal with that shit. I mean, I could make it a month at home with gas and food and stuff. You know, maybe two or three if I really, you know, I got a lake, you know, I can get water out of. But, dude, I don't want to be a fucking warlord, like having, you know, making my neighbors fucking grow corn on the golf course at gunpoint. Like, that just doesn't sound fun.
Now, with that being said, you know, if I was ever pushed into a corner where, like, it was something I truly could not live, you know, I could not live with myself to capitulate. And like, I mean, you know, I suppose that, you know, like someone's going to die. But as far as like a wide scale thing, what that would look like, the current conflict that we have ideologically is very different than the one the founders faced, you know, 240 years ago. So, I think people on both sides of that argument should really contemplate what that looks like. If one group keeps pushing for authoritarian control and tyranny, well, something's going to break. And when it does, it's going to look very fucked up. And for the people that kind of fantasize about that outcome, you know, if you have small children, if you have, you know, something, old parents, grandparents, whatever, like, go watch the Book of Eli. And that's probably what, you know, a post-apocalyptic or post-revolutionary world might look like.
I mean, 95% of our population is like, oh, you know, I'll just, when it happens, I'll prepare. It's like, that's all the people that were wiping their ass with their hands after they couldn't get toilet paper during COVID said. I mean, it goes to shit fast, people.
I saw a meme that I thought was really poignant, and it was, it showed these people, like, trampling each other to death. Literally, people died. And it's like, this is what it looks like when Nikes go on sale. Like, what do you think it's going to look like when the fucking water turns off?
Oh, dude, they'll be shooting people in the fucking street for a case of water. I mean, yeah. It's going to get crazy. I would imagine, I think that would be within 48 hours. Like, if shit really went to shit and everybody just said, fuck it.
Can you pull this up? Can you Google Maholsky helicopter Harvey? Can you Google this real quick? I don't know if a lot of you guys know, but like, can you play that? Yeah. We don't have to play all of it, but just part of it. I want people to.
All right, we've had so many scenes of helicopter rescues, and you might ask, so where do they get all these helicopters? Not all government issued. The fact of the matter is, a lot of businesses have kicked in to make sure
they put a picture of their dude shooting out of it
at their own expense. Mike Ohaske is one of them. He formed a fleet of helicopters. A fleet of helicopters to do the job. Took it upon himself to do this. No government told him to do this. No governor or mayor called him up. He did it of his own volition. He joins us on the phone. Mike, very good to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How many helicopters did you launch in this effort?
Between 5 and 6. Five on one day, 6 on another. And today we have another 5 out there.
And where are they dispersed, Mike?
Right now we're focusing like on the Orange County and Vidor, Texas area. That place, I think, is ground zero right now.
And what made you do it? I mean, obviously, it was pretty risky when this all started. Still is, you could argue. I mean, this is not easy work or danger-free work. But steer me through how it all began.
I mean, we were seeing the reports of that storm coming in. We saw some of the devastation that happened down there, and I was thinking that I had access to some unique assets, and I figured we could bring them in.
All right. So what did you use the helicopters for?
Okay.
I wanted to
bring this up because I've been in disaster areas where your emergency response infrastructure is overwhelmed immediately. Okay. There are only so many EMSs in your city and county. There are only so many police cars. And when the police station's flooded and most of the police cars and EMSs are, you know, destroyed or whatever, people would be surprised how fast like this illusion of stability evaporates. I've been there. Like I brought helicopters in to try to help under Harvey. And mind you, this was regional. Like it was just this region of like East Texas and Louisiana, parts of that, the coast, that were messed up. The rest of the country was still functioning just fine. But within hours, hospitals and any kind of emergency service was immediately overwhelmed. If you were calling 911 because your arm was severed, no one's fucking coming. Number one, they can't get to you. Number two, like they don't have enough trucks. So for the people that dismiss whether or not an armed populace could make an immediate change in like the way things work, you're fucking wrong, man. Because as soon as something pops off, there is just not enough, people. So again, I take this conversation about like the Second Amendment, what it was intended for and what that could potentially look like, because you do have millions of very frustrated, very well-armed people. And I pray to God that like we never see what that looks like, because it would happen so fast and the changes would be so fundamentally devastating, you couldn't fathom it. I've seen what happens when it fucking rains too hard. imagine that, just, with angry armed people. They go fast.
Yeah, I got it. So one story from that whole incident. I got two. One's funny, but I'll do the serious one first. So, I used to live in Galveston. There's a lot of refineries down there, and one of them was always the Dow Chemical Refinery, and we had rail cars lined up, and all they had was like basically ping pong balls in them, and they would melt them down and turn them into some sort of, I don't know, packing peanuts. I don't know what the fuck they turned them into. Either way, like part of our job, and I wasn't there at the point, but I know y'all went down there, and y'all had to fly them supplies. And they were isolated at this plant, but they had to keep the plant safe. It's like a nuclear reactor. Like you gotta keep it running or else cause a lot of problems, environmental problems, whatnot. And they didn't ask for food. They didn't ask for anything. They asked for underwear. They asked for socks. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't have a change of clothes. I mean, imagine if the world went to shit and you're traveling, you're stuck with the clothes on your back and that's it. You're not getting your luggage from the fucking airline that just shut down. Good luck.
There was an ammonia plant in Galveston that was about to explode. They the people that ran that plant offered us pretty much any sum of money we possibly wanted to go in there and fly dudes in to cut relief holes to relieve some of the pressure. And mind you, all of my guys that were flying with us that those several days were like volunteers. They brought in their own private helicopters and their own private planes. And I asked, you know, does anybody want to go down there? Like, there, not a lot of people were super eager about to fly into like an ammonia cloud.
Yeah.
And have to, but that tells you right there, like, just left unattended, a plant that's an ammonia plant would, you know,
they'd be screwed in a matter of days.
Yeah. So, you know, what happens if there's a little bit of unrest that, you know, you're not going to cool your, man, it would become Book of Eli very fast.
I think one of the funny stories was, you know, the first night we got there, we hadn't quite got our shit together, and we're like, we gotta get some food. Some guys, I gotta go to Taco Bell. So they took a helicopter, because that airport, we're at Katy Executive, completely surrounded by water. Like, there is no way out of there by vehicle. Even the fixed wing strip was down. Like, you'd only put helicopters down in this place. So they took the smallest helicopter we had, which is an R-44, and like, we're gonna go to Taco Bell and order like 160 tacos or something fucking crazy. So these guys are in the helicopter calling them from the air, and they're like, hey, we need 160 tacos. And they're like, you need to be here to order. Like, we can't order and call it in. You know, this isn't Chili's and whatever. And you can probably do it now after COVID. But either way, these guys, they're like, we're in a fucking helicopter. Like, we're not there. Like, we're going to land in your parking lot. And they're like, ah, whatever. We're not making the tacos. And they're like, all right, well, fuck you, whatever. And put a fucking helicopter down in the Taco Bell parking lot. And they're like, all right, can we have our tacos now? And they had to sit there for a while. And I remember getting back. And I remember all the National Guard had showed up. And they were like, Taco Bell. You know, they probably just got called up the day before, you know, or doing God knows what. I don't know what, you know, what they're doing day to day, but they were showing up in those Chinooks that you saw in the video. And we ended up sharing our Taco Bell with all the, you know, all like the 18-year-olds from the National Guard that had showed up. They're super fucking excited.
There was there was like an Army unit or a National Guard unit somewhere, and they were like completely cut off. And I sent a Gulfstream full of ice and pizza to them.
Oh, I never even heard about that.
Yeah, it was pretty wild, man. Like, that week was crazy. But I mean, the point is, I bring it up right now. I have seen what it looks like when shit goes south, and it happens so fast. And I mean, this illusion of stability, it's quite fleeting. It's very easy to overwhelm every single like contingency that your city or county might have, and very quickly it becomes bad. Now, if you're, you know, 20-year-old stud and you think you got to get, you're fine, but your grandparents are probably dead. Like, your young children are probably dead. You know, anybody with any kind of ailment is probably dead. So if you're fantasizing about that day, I hope that we can somehow work this out another way, because if it comes down to that, it's going to look very bad.
Do you remember the guy that called the first day and was like, can you save my horse? Like, they wouldn't leave their house because like their horse was like up to its head, and there's some German pilot there, and he's like a rescue pilot for the oil rigs, and he's like, I'll do it. And his partner's like, we don't even have like a sling or anything to pick it up. And he's like, he's a farmer, he'll figure it out.
Yeah,
because they had to hook on their helicopter, you know. And he's like, well, like, how the fuck are we gonna hook a horse up? And his co-pilot, another, I think it was German too, was like, I don't fuck if I know.
No, yeah. So the helicopter itself had hoist capabilities, but like, they didn't have a harness that could pick up a horse. But these guys were willing to try.
Well, even this co-pilot's like, we're not fucking doing that. And the guy's like, yeah, we are. And he just starts walking out of the building, and his partner's like, where the fuck are you going? He's like, I'm gonna go burn off fuel so we can pick up this fucking horse.
Yeah, he had to burn off fuel from the helicopter to try to lift a horse.
Thank God the army brought a 5-ton and got the horse out, because these people were just gonna drown with their horse. Like, I love my pets, but I don't know if I drowned. I mean, like, yeah, maybe my dog, but I can carry a dog, you know. I don't know why he just didn't like ride the horse out. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Can swim, right?
Yeah.
See, I remember there was a school bus trapped in this one little peak. There was like a high elevation point surrounded by water, and it was a school bus. And we landed on that high point, and we were told the school bus driver, like, hey, you can come with us. He's like, no, I'm good. I'm going to wait. I have a ride coming. I'm like, oh. I was like, bro, we've been flying around for like the last 8 hours. Like, there is no ride coming.
Listen to a guy with the boat, you're fucked.
Yeah, like, yeah, unless your ride's coming with a fucking boat, you're not going to get out. And this guy was totally confident. Like, no, they're just right up the road. And anyways, we took off, because I'm not going to like fight the grown man and drag him to a helicopter, right? So we just, okay, you know, like, can't save them all. And that particular like dam or levee ended up breaking like a couple hours later. So unless his ride showed up, you know, like, the guy probably spent a week in a tree. I don't think he died, but I mean, like, I hope he fucking climbed a tree. So, all right, here, let's see here. Here's a good one. With all the saturation with high-end tactical hunting products from companies like First Light, QU, Sitka, et al., why create another company? How, if at all, this impact of Sons Liberty Development, how would they integrate that into their customer base, which is fiercely loyal? So I'll be honest, man. The Wilderness Company project that we're working on, I haven't been this excited about anything since like the launch of Sons Liberty. And I've always looked at high performance hunting clothing and seen like there's a mechanical function to it. I mean, if you look at a pair of pants that's built for something, the way it's reinforced, the way things are stitched here, like this little this little loop here, or like the way like the pockets are cut, they all have like a real purpose. And until somebody sits down, I had to get a crash course in this stuff because I never understood why this tiny feature was here and the thought that went behind it. Well, as we were developing this stuff and you start realizing like the mechanical and technical reasons for stuff, it's really cool. If you learn how to use your clothing the way it was designed and built, you will have a considerable advantage, but not just hunting, but just being outdoors. Like the way certain layering systems work, the way you would pair certain things for certain conditions. Are you sitting static or are you moving? Are you working through like marshlands or are you working through something arid? And, what does this feature on the clothing do? There's a highly technical aspect to how these things are built. And unless someone's ever like sat down and taught you about that, or unless I suppose you've learned on your own and you've needed this stuff, I think people take for granted using clothing as a tool.
I agree. It's funny. I go hunting and that's one thing we were talking. So Glenn, we're gonna have him on the podcast soon, is the CEO of the Wilderness Company and a good friend of Mike's and mine. And retired Navy SEAL knows a lot about clothing. We're talking about the layering system, and the military layering system is so complex. Like, you had like a 3 and a 5 and it makes a 7, it's insane. So we're trying to, just the complexity of what he's done is amazing. And I know in my experience, like when I've been hunting, I've bought like QU and Sitka nice stuff, and I don't really think about like, this needs to keep me warm. And I'm like, it looks cool and it feels nice. And I like it. And then I get out in the hunting blind, I'm freezing my fucking ass off because I didn't buy the right stuff. And, we've got lightweight, midweight, heavyweight, waders, gloves, I mean, everything. We're coming to market with an entire full line of clothing that's really, pieces. Really well thought out. And I mean, that's not something anybody's ever done. And it's kind of nice. I was going to get another question here next, but complete opposite of what me and Mike did with Sons of Liberty. Cause I mean, when we came, we were like, we go buy 10 D10s, different thing, but Wilderness Co. the product is amazing. I mean, it is really well thought out. The camo is amazing. It's taken us 2 years and a lot of money to get to this point, and I think y'all are all going to love it.
Yeah. It's very purpose driven. It's not, we didn't build this like to go hang out at a hunting resort. We built this like to keep people alive and get them a real advantage over their prey in the real outdoors. That sometimes makes all the difference. Like if whatever condition or climate or place you find yourself in, like we have a system for that. And when you understand the thought that went behind it and the purpose. A lot of what we're going to do for Wilderness Company is not just like, here's a picture of a cool jacket. Like, so we might launch a picture of a cool jacket, and the next two posts are going to be educating people on every single function of that jacket so you really understand how to use it. And it's not just put it on. Like, if you understand how to use all of the features, it's pretty fucking cool.
It'll come in real handy when the world falls apart, too.
Yeah, I suppose
so. When you're living in a fucking tree, it's going to keep you warm. It's great stuff, guys. We're really looking forward to all of it. I have it packed up to go to an event tomorrow. I told Mike we should have been here wearing like puff jackets, looking all cool in our camo. And it's very effective. That was number one goal. Everything, we've done, even with Sons of Liberty, is mission first, but it does look cool too. I mean, rule number one, always look cool. So
yeah, it's sharp looking stuff, man. Like the cuts, everything, like, it's pretty flattering stuff. You look good in it, right?
I'm worried about looking cool if I'm freezing my ass off in a deer blind.
Hey, so, okay, here's a good question. So, would love for you guys to post a resource guide giving life expectancy range for well-made parts. I know that there are outliers and tons of factors, but it'd be helpful to have an idea of how long parts last for those trying to Yeah, pretty preemptive. So that's an interesting question. I teach this in my armorer school. I do not think that round count is something that you should rely on for the predictability of service life, because it's not correct. You know, the guy that asked the question acknowledges that there are several factors in there, right? But there are so many factors that, again, if you've serviced enough rifles and you've looked at things and you're trying to keep things at optimal performance readiness, do not give a shit about round counts, okay? Visual inspection, gauging, like looking at stuff, checking the tension of the springs, inspecting for cracks or fissures, measuring stuff. That is how you keep a weapon at optimal readiness. I would completely disregard round count. Now, granted, your better made stuff made of the right materials and tested correctly, okay, is most likely going to last much longer than the stuff that was not made that way. But if your only indicator is round count, well, then you're going to be wrong. I mean, like, first of all, outside of like sniper communities or like precision shooter communities, round counts are rarely ever tracked with any kind of accuracy. And I don't care what unit you're in or what entity you're a part of, most round counts are highly exaggerated. And so, you know, oh yeah, man, this thing's got 10,000 rounds on it. Like, no, it's got like 4,800. You know, it felt like 10,000 because, you know, it happened in 2 days. But no, so don't look at that. You want to actually understand what each component does, what it's supposed to look like, and at the point in which it's becoming not, where you're starting to get into mechanical uncertainty. Like I said, measuring an action spring, like pushing an ejector spring, inspecting for this or that, you know, gauging things, chamber throat erosion. That is the metric. The round count doesn't mean shit. We've seen guns go 50,000 rounds on component A, and we've seen that same component wear out in 10,000 rounds. If you have that giant of a fucking gap between the two, then trying to like assign a round count to that is meaningless. The visual inspection, gauging, and then, you know, having an actual understanding of the what that component does and why, you should be able to preemptively service a gun and never have a true mechanical stoppage. I think that a well-made and maintained rifle can go its entire life without one single mechanical stoppage.
I remember you can fire a gun. A lot of people don't realize this. Oh, you got to line up your gas rings. You can fire a gun with one gas ring. Like, no problem. We've touched this numerous times. Absolutely no problem. All right, so let's go. You know, a little side note. It's funny. Sitting here. Actually, never mind. I'm not going to get into that. All right. So why do you guys in your shop act like SLGW arrow lowers never existed? Is it supposed to be some sort of dark past? I personally like knowing, and I've supported y'all from the beginning. Well, first of all, I'll tell you what. Half the guys in the shop probably don't even know those fucking things even exist. I mean, they're probably pretending they don't exist, and it's plausible deniability. Yeah, they probably have no fucking idea.
Mind you, whenever the arrow lowers were part of Sons Liberty, that was whenever Kyle and I were the only people at Sons Liberty.
If we didn't sell some lowers, Mike wasn't going to have vodka. So
yeah. So it was Kyle, myself, and then Dylan came along shortly after. So you have to remember, we've gone from 3 guys to 10 to 20 to 40 to 50, 60. So the guys that work here now, like the newest dudes, they were so far removed from the days of the arrow lower. Now, when you're a brand new company and you have no fucking money and you're calling around trying to find someone that will work with you, like Arrow's minimum was like something we could afford. And more importantly, this is the more important answer to your fucking question. The mechanically least important part of a gun is the lower. The lower is a housing for a component. We don't deny that the very first 50 guns, that's it, 50 guns, that we made were built on arrow lowers. That was because they would agree to sell us a minimum of 50, and we lasered the Sons Liberty logo on the right side of the magwell. We don't deny that. Matter of fact, we try to buy those back. Anytime I see one of those things like come across, like, you know, anywhere, someone brings one in for service, I will offer them an entirely new gun or to buy it back. Not because we're trying to hide it, because like I think it's really fucking cool.
I'd like to put one in a shadow box. I think it'd be really cool.
Yeah, I think it's a really fucking cool like part of the like origins of our company. We don't hide that. I don't know where you get that idea from. No, the very first 50 guns were built on arrow lowers. And by the way, arrow makes a lower that is more than acceptable mechanically, it's the least important part. It's a housing for a component. And if you know somebody that has one, call us. I will buy it from them because I think it's a cool part of our fucking story. So I'm not sure, like, oh, you're trying to hide it.
My brother's best friend, Colin, has one.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to find out where he lives. I'm going to take it. Okay. You know, you got to, we'll throw some pictures in of, I'll send our producer, Carlos, here some pictures of the old shop. It was nuts, man. Like we were determined to build the best gun we possibly could, but obviously we had to do it the best we could. The first, and, you know, you have to keep in mind those Arrow lowers lasted what, like the first like 2 months we're in business.
Yeah.
And after that, you know, we were making our own
tactical machining.
Yeah. Tactical machining made our first lowers and they do great work. And they, you know, we were buying detent like the 10, you know, buying the rails by the one. We made our first rail, you know, not to shit talk, but we made our first rail because we were using ALG rails at the time. And the first rail we actually made was the first EXO rail, which was pretty basic bitch, but it was a nice rail. It was made by SLR. And we made that rail because ALG kept, we were just selling too cheap and we wanted to do our own thing. But we actually started from the bottom up making more, you know, rails we could use for government contracts and stuff like that.
Well, not just that though, but like, I mean, again, like when I'm out teaching this class and I'm trying to teach people, how do you make a good fighting rifle, a reliable rifle that you can stake your life on and you don't have to break the bank, right? Well, in my opinion, you know, like, and this still, I still subscribe to this a lot. The engine of the gun is the barrel, gas block, gas port, gas tube, bolt carrier group, gas key, buffer system, spring. Like, that is the engine. Everything else, okay, is, you know, trim and, you know, upholstery and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, power windows.
So if I wanted a gun that you could, like, lock into a vise and have some kind of machine pull the trigger indefinitely, like, all I really would give a fuck about at the time was which gun would just continue to fire the longest. And I got to be honest, that your rail has nothing to do with the internal function of that gun. Now, as the company's evolved and the needs of our end users, or we've started catering to the end users that have more sophisticated needs, then we've had to really upgrade the idea of how we do rails and other things. But like, when we first started, all I wanted to do was build a rifle that would mechanically outrun the competition. And I didn't give a shit about rails and furniture and things like that. I wanted to make sure, like, the bolt carrier group, the gas system, the buffer, that would just continue to plow. So anyways, I think it's kind of funny. Like, this is one of those Reddit fucking things. I think we're like, oh, these guys have secrets, or oh, these guys have.
Ah, dude, we're open about it. Dude, we should post a picture of our first gun. I still have the lower, actually, from our first gun. It was built on a Seekins billet lower. The yeah. very first gun we ever built had an FN Cold Hammer Forge barrel. I can't remember what rail it had. We got to go look at a picture. I remember it had that LaRue stock that had like the cigar cutter that had like the hole you pulled. They had to recall them all because they broke.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be really surprised. I mean, at an ALG, at a Geissele trigger, an SSA, it's still an A5 system. We've done that from day one.
Yeah, A5 was day one.
You know, you'd probably be really surprised at the stuff. The very first thing we made was a sawed-off shotgun. We still have it. It's called Uncle. It is literally in the NFA registry as Uncle Joe, which is kind of funny. He's fucking president now.
Yeah, because Joe Biden came out like, get a shotgun, fire two blasts. And so we made a sawed-off
shotgun. We made a fucking two-blast shotgun.
Yeah.
Bastard.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, fuck you. I've been waiting to use this thing.
So here's a good one. What's the difference between the super bougie barrel like a Craddock and an SOLGW barrel? I just installed my 18 SOWD match barrel and it's fucking awesome. Okay, so let's put branding aside and let's put, you know, whatever kind of like brand perception of things aside are and get down to the empirical and mechanical and material reasons why anything is good or bad. If let's make up a company that's called Big Dick Tactical. Okay.
Probably a thing.
Probably is. If Big Dick Tactical tomorrow released a barrel where the bore concentricity and the bore diameter consistency was perfect. Okay, and the chamber was cut truly concentric to the bore and the outside contour, okay, that barrel would probably shoot as good as Craddock or Krieger or Bartline or Hart or, you know, Schillen or any of the match grade barrels. You have to remember, what makes up barrels shoot does not have to do with the fucking logo on the side. It has to do with whether or not you've achieved those things. Bore concentricity, bore size consistency, the way that thing is chambered, the crown, you know, the like the care and the rifling and the lands and all, there's several things that go in there. The what's lasered on the side of the thing has zero impact on function. Now, granted, we have come to expect very consistent performance out of Krieger and Schillen and Bartline and things like that. So we know that if their name's on the side of it, it probably has achieved all those other things. That's the way they do stuff. When we release a barrel with Sons of Liberty on the side, okay, if we have also achieved all of those important metrics, guess what? That fucking barrel's going to shoot. So what's the difference between, you know, our new barrels and those other ones? Well, I mean, I suppose if you were to invest in some air gauges and pin gauges and, you know, a 50 millionth indicator to chuck the thing up and spin it, well, the answer is not a fucking thing, right? I mean, if you make the thing in and you put those things as the emphasis of your focus, the performance, okay, is going to be there. And instead of sitting there and arguing over brands, go shoot the fucker. The target won't lie. Go shoot the thing. Go look at your group size. Go do whatever you're going to do and let that be your metric. And I'm proud to say, like, I'm ready to play.
Yeah, we're like I said, this is the year of the barrel. We're putting a lot of effort into the barrel side of things. And, you know, kind of be funny to have a brand name Big Dick Tactical. You have like the really high end shit that's got like a dick lasered on it, and then like the next grade, and then like the blims of a soft dick.
Yeah, that I'm in. I'm like, all right,
side business. Once we get the Wilderness Company off the ground, it's next. Hey, come on and hey guys, ask more questions. Go check it out, Spotify, YouTube. I mean, obviously, if you've gotten to this point, you listen to the fucking thing, but. Can't see us, you know. You gotta watch. It's amazing. I think that's it. We're done. Good.
So, by the way, we have a lot of really cool guests lined up, ready to come on. And like some of these things that we do, like we're just kind of we're practicing. Like right now, we consider like the first 10 episodes, just you know, trial and error, total practice. Keep an eye on it because like we have some cool, really cool stuff coming up, and
tune in every week.
Yeah, we're gonna get pretty good. All right, guys, thanks so much.
Later, guys.
Thanks for joining us today right here at the Liberty Tree Studio. But be sure to visit us at solgw.com for hard-use blasters, badass swag, and much, much more.